Okay, good morning, everyone. Thank you for coming this morning to join us for our Kashrut Symposium. It's always a wonderful pleasure. I'd like to thank Shomrei Emunah for hosting us and being such wonderful partners. Shomrei Emunah, Davad, for being wonderful co-sponsors with us in this program, and all the other Vad Rabbanim, Rabbi Walter, who was very encouraging and supportive, is out of town this morning, could join us. See Rabbi Ryan, and all the other Rabbanim of the Vad. So I'd like to thank the Shomrei office staff for all the arrangements and for the setup, Josh Breitstein, Stuart Rosenthal for videotaping this, and my dear friend, Rabbi Singer, who we worked together on partnering on this, and President of the Vad, and Rabbi of Young Israel of Potomac, and Chavrus, and a dear friend as well. So it's very special, and I would like to call on Rabbi Singer just to give a few words of introduction on behalf of the Vad.
Welcome, and thank you so much, Rabbi Winter, for your kind words. The feelings are, of course, more than mutual. I just wanted to talk just for a second and express a tremendous hakara satov that I and on behalf of the entire Vad Rabbanan have to Rav Heinemann Shlita and the Star K, and in particular to Rav Svi Holland, who functions as a kashrus administrator for the Star K, but also independently functions as our director, the Vad Rabbanan of Greater Washington's director of field operations. We are very grateful to him and to the entire Star K operation for the professionalism, common sense, problem-solving capabilities, and dedication that the entire organization and Rabbi Holland brings to this very important and sacred task. We're also very, very appreciative to the Star K for the respect that the Star K has shown and continues to show for the mission, the minhagim, the practices, and the integrity of the Vad Rabbanan of Greater Washington. We are grateful, as I said, to Rabbi Holland. We're grateful to Dr. Pollack, and of course, it all starts from the top. We're profoundly grateful to Rabbi Heinemann. And with that, it gives me a great deal of pleasure to introduce the Rav.
Good morning, everyone. Bershus, the Rav Winter, Rav Singer, heads of the Kol and the Vad. I have a few remarks to say about challenges of kosher challenges. Today, kashrus is easier and more difficult than it ever was. They have introduced the gene of a turkey in a tomato to make it a bigger tomato, a redder tomato, a more tasty tomato. So the question is, do you have to shech the tomato? Are you become fleshics? What is, there's all kinds of new questions that came up that never had before. My thinking is, if it looks like a tomato, smells like a tomato, tastes like a tomato, then it's a tomato. One of the problems we have today is that a lot of our food comes from China. Because it's cheaper in China, the labor's cheaper, so the food comes from China. What's the problem if it comes from China? The Chinese don't tell the truth. If they say it's red, expect it to be blue. If they say it's hot, expect it to be cold, or vice versa. It's not that they're liars. It's just that that's their culture. That's how they talk. You know, it's like when you make, we have the same problem. We make a chasna. Chuppah is at 7:30. If the chuppah is at 8 o'clock, does the one who is in charge of this wedding, does he say, "I'm sorry, Rabbi Sai, I'm sorry that it started late"? No, it's expected to start late. When you have a shir about kashas challenges, it's supposed to start at 9:30, and start at 9:37, did anyone think that they have to excuse themselves? No. It's an Asian type of way of life. And we are Asians because we come from Eretz Yisrael, which is in Asia. So but it does have to do with kashrus. You cannot trust them at all. So that's a challenge. Even in such innocuous items that you might think don't need any heksha whatsoever. There's no shaila with it. Is there shaila with sugar? There's shaila with, you know what happened with the milk? That they put in a chemical into the milk so that the way they tested, there had to be a certain amount of milk if you say that it's milk. So they put in a chemical which makes it seem as if there's more milk in it. Hundreds of thousands of people got sick from it. Many people died from it. But it doesn't matter. In China, there are so many people. There was a law in China that you're not allowed to have more than one child. Because that's how you take care of the food problem. It's not enough food. So instead of making more food, you just make less people. And then you've got no problems anymore. Now, it's catching up on them. Because now they have not enough people to take care of all the needs of the country. So not enough people, but in other words, after 25 years, the population will go down by a significant percent. So now they need more people. So I think that now maybe the laws change somewhat. But for kashrus, it's a very big problem. We have to be on top of them. We were making fish over there. We had two mashgichim. One mashgich was checking the fish to make sure it was kosher fish. And the second one, his job was to make sure that when it's packaged, that there's a kosher stamp on every carton to make sure that it is this kosher fish which has been checked. Now, Mashgiach had a count of how many cartons there were. At the end of the day, he went into the freezer and guess what? There were three times as much cartons as he had made, all with a kosher stamp on it. They took the first box of kosher stamp, they went and they rushed to a place and they got it copied, and so therefore we couldn't use any of the fish. I mean, we have an office in China, because you have to know exactly everything was going on in with their language, whatever. It's not of our mashgichim are so fluent in Chinese. We have an office in China with Chinese secretaries and whatever people, so that it helps us. We try our best. There was one, and this is something very common in China, they forge a letter. They have your letter for a certain product, and then they go to make another product, and they just type it in, the same type of that you have. And so now you have another product with a supposed heksha. So when that happened, we said, we can't give you a heksha anymore, we're taking off the heksha. All right, so this company didn't have a heksha. A new company came, and they wanted a heksha. Well, this was a new company, it was a different address, a different name. We had no problem with it. We gave them a heksha, and then we found out it was the same company. So it's like if it's you have a building which is on the corner of University and Alcoa, so then one day it was Alcoa address, and the next day it was University Avenue address, and they changed the name, and it was the same thing. So it's difficult. But Baruch Hashem, hope we're making a go of it. We do have problems, but by now they're starting to find out that we're in business, and once they're backlisted from one kashrus company, no other company will take them unless we make sure that it's not the same company. We have to make sure about that. So some of these kosher challenges are challenges for kashrus companies, the ones that give the kashrus, and some are challenges for the consumer. Even after it's gone through the whole kashrus process, some things are for the consumer. Like, Baruch Hashem, in this area of the country, we don't have any problem with the water. But in the New York area, in the five boroughs of New York, they have a problem with the water, that there are cocoa pods in the water. They are living organisms that are in the water. The reason why they have it in New York and don't have it over here is because there's only three cities in the United States that are not required to filter the water. Over here the water's filtered, and they filter out all these cocoa pods. They're all over, but they're filtered out. New York, Boston, and Seattle are the only three cities in the United States that are not required to filter the water, because they have such a good system that the water is clear even without filtering it. And because it's so clear, I guess it's such good water that these cocoa pods, they like it. They're all over. But they're in the water. I was in New York after I heard about this question. It came up about 10 years ago, and I went to a faucet, and I filled up a small vial this big, and it's like a quarter of an inch in diameter and about 2.5 inches long. And then when I got home, I looked at it. There were about 20 cocoa pods in it, and you can see the feet and the head and the antlers and everything else like that. So this is, I'm not sure, but I believe that they are a lot of protein in cocoa pods, and so therefore, it's health-wise, it's not a problem. As a matter of fact, this whole question about insects, which has basically cropped up today more than there ever was before, there's a reason for it. There is a bigger problem now than before. It's not just that we're more aware of it. So there were certain foods that we knew always had a problem, like romaine lettuce and other foods that were known to have it. But in general, the farmers, they used to spray their fields with a disinfectant with a something that kills the bugs. And pesticides, herbicides, whatever you want to call them, and they were bug free. But it's an interesting thing. Bugs just like people come in all different types. Some are weaker and some are stronger. And there were some bugs that were able to live with the herb, with these insecticides. They were the strong ones. So even though the 99% of the bugs were killed out, there was 1% of strong ones that persisted and lived. Well, when that happened, the next generation was a generation of stronger bugs, stronger insects, because those are the only ones that were able to survive. So when that happened, so they had to make stronger insecticides against them to wipe them out. So it took care about 99% of them, and the ones that were super strong, they lived. And the next generation of bugs was these super strong bugs. So now they had to make even stronger insecticides. And what happened? 99% of them were killed out, and the super bugs, they were the ones that remained alive. And the next generation was even stronger bugs. Till it came to the point that United States government, USDA, said, what's better for people to eat these insecticides which are so strong, which have side effects for people, or to eat bugs? What's wrong with bugs? You could eat them, they're foods. No one's going to get sick from eating bugs. But a person can get sick, and some severely sick, from these insecticides. So they said, no more of these insecticides. So that's when, all of a sudden, the bugs, now that the Xeria was off from them, they were Mekayim, Huruvu, Umilus, Aretz, that they really found in many things that we hadn't had a problem with them before. So it is a real problem, and to be able to deal with this problem, there are different ways. One is to grow them differently. The bugs come from, they probably come from insects that fly, that's one stage of their life, and lay eggs, and then they hatch into these worms, or whatever they are, thrips, whatever they are. Now, in order to stop that, if you grow them under a net. It lets the air through, lets some of the sunlight through, but it doesn't. But the bugs, when in the stage where they can fly, they won't be able to get in. That is one way of stopping them. So it's expensive because you've got to have these nets, and also that if they rip, you have to repair them. But it's one way of doing it. That's what it did in Israel, where the problem of the bugs are even bigger than they are over here. So they did that, and it's definitely helps very much. So that's one thing, how to do it. There's another way. There's some vegetables that you can wash. Let's say lettuce. You can wash them, but you have to wash them in such a way that will get rid of the bugs. So we have to check them. So we have a few companies, some big companies. We have a mashgiach tmidi. Whenever a new batch comes in, so typically a new batch will be about 40,000 pounds of cabbage or lettuce. So they go through their wash system, which doesn't just wash it, but it squirts water on it at high pressure. It can't be too high, otherwise it'll ruin it. And then it goes through, or the water goes through a sieve. And then we check them and see. We just check three samples to see if it is clean or if it's not clean. We found out something very interesting. If the lettuce doesn't have any bugs before it comes in, the system works perfectly. But if it does have bugs in it, it doesn't work. Well, let me modify that a little bit. If it's infested with bugs, it's not going to work. If there's just a few bugs, the system will work. It does work. So we have mashgiach. And that's why when we give a heksha on a product, we don't print it on the label. We can't print it on the label, on the packaging, because we don't know if it's going to pass or it's not going to pass. If it doesn't pass, it's not as if they throw it away in the garbage. As a matter of fact, most of them don't pass. So if they don't pass, they sell it without the heksha. So it's in the date code. It's like it says, used before January the 1st. So then there'll be a stockade next to that. The mashgiach has that stockade, and it gives it to the thing to put it to the people to put in. And then it has the heksha. If it doesn't pass, then it doesn't have a heksha. So you have to be very careful. Even though you may have heard that Fresh Express or some other company, Dole, we don't have Dole anymore. Because there were too little that was passing, so they figured they'll get a different heksha. But it doesn't matter. But so if it didn't have it, then it means that it did not pass. Now, it's interesting. Some companies, they have our heksha, but there are other places that didn't want to rely on us, and they went and they checked it also. They check it when it comes in. When it comes in, they check three packages, and if they see that there are no bugs in it, they say it's okay. They put the label on it. If it's not all right, so then they send it back to the company or they go it some other way. So they sometimes say it's okay when we didn't say it's okay. And sometimes, why? Because in their three samples, which they took, they didn't find anything. We didn't say it's okay, because now three samples that we took, we did find. And sometimes we said that it was okay, and they said it was not okay. It's possible, because now three samples, there was nothing, and in the three samples, they did find something. So it is possible. In other words, when we say that it's you don't have to check it, it is not that we can say 100% that there's no bugs here. What we're saying is that the halacha does not require that you check it. Because if you checked three samples at random, and they're all from the same origin, and you haven't found anything, you can assume that there's nothing here. So then what you can assume is nothing here, you can eat it. Let me say the following. There's halachas about bugs. Some bugs you're allowed to eat and some bugs you're not allowed to eat. I hate to say this, but this is the truth. Do you know when you eat cheese? I hope you're going to eat cheese after I tell you this. You are eating a whole mouthful of bacteria. Bacteria are living organisms. They walk around, they run around, they are the ones that make the milk into cheese. You can't have cheese without bacteria. So and you eat them. It doesn't matter. These are the type of bugs that you're allowed to, the Torah says you're allowed to eat it. And it's simple. The Torah says you're allowed to eat it because you can't. It wasn't known in 1,000 years ago that there was such a thing as bacteria. It wasn't known. So does that mean to say that all the Yidden who ate cheese in those days were doing avera? The Baruch Hashem doesn't come and try and trick people and say, ha, I caught you, now you're eating something treif. No. If you can't see it, and you can't really, so then it is not considered as, it's not forbidden. Rav Moshe Feinstein goes so far as to say, if you can see it, But you can't tell from looking at it that it's a bug. It's too small to see. Just looks like a black spot. Then it's not, he says, he thinks that it's Yavatita for the same reason. Vamsal not trying to trick us. The only time you know how to eat it if you can tell that it's a bug. Now, there's certain bugs in cheese. This is really what I'm getting to. Even if you can see the bugs on it, if you can see the worms on it, they already have worms in it. If they were born in the cheese and they never left the cheese, you're allowed to eat them. Maybe today people are a little bit a little bit upset about eating worms, but they so maybe there's it's about tishaksu. But as far as eating worms go, it would be permitted. Now there's a whole question about worms and fish. Okay, now there's the anisakis worm in the fish, and it's only in fish which are grown, which live in the North Atlantic region. There's a question about whether these worms that you find in the meat of the fish, whether they're permitted. Actually, the Gemara discusses this, and the Shulchan Aruch discusses this, and they say that if you find the worms, the Torah says, "Lo'ad l'shaksu s'lashay seichem b'chol hasheretz hasheretz." You're not allowed to defile yourself with a worm that crawls. If it doesn't crawl, then it's permitted. So when you see a worm, you assume that it crawled. If you find it in the meat of the fish, not in the stomach, if it's in the stomach, it's treif. Because you say it probably crawled and the fish swallowed it. But when you find it in the meat of the fish, where's it going to crawl? There's no place to crawl. So then the Gemara says it's permitted, the Shulchan Aruch says it's permitted. And the OU is based on the Pesach Rebelsky, Zichron Lebracha, said that if you find worms in the meat of the fish, it's permitted. It says so in Shulchan Aruch. And I really do agree with him that it would be permitted. But since all the Gedolim came out and they said that you can't eat the worms in the fish, and I believe that the reason why they said that was because they were afraid maybe it came from the stomach, even though that this question was a question in the times of the Gemara also, and the times of the Shulchan Aruch. But since they all came out, so therefore the Star K does not allow any worms in fish. And since it's very difficult to check it, so don't eat those kind of fish, which we don't allow those type of fish which have these worms in it. So there's two types of salmon. There's the wild salmon and there is the farmed salmon. Farmed salmon is that they have a swimming pool and that's where they grow these salmon. It's actually very tricky because salmon, when they're young, they have to have fresh water. When they get older, they have to have salt water. So there's a way how to do that, to start out with fresh water and change it to salt water at the right time. But the farmed salmon has no bugs in it. Farmed salmon is much cheaper than the wild salmon. Wild salmon is supposed to be healthier. All the canned salmon is wild salmon. You cannot can farmed salmon. It's not stiff enough that you can get it into a can in a meaningful way. So so that's a challenge. It's a challenge. But the salmon that you buy in the supermarket, even if it's under the VAD, is because it is the farm salmon. It's the cheapest salmon. That's a salmon which most people like anyway because of the price. Even though maybe the taste may be more geschmack from the wild salmon. the kashrus organizations have a tremendous challenge, and this it has to do with private labels. So, you know, you have over here giant supermarkets. Giant supermarkets, they have maybe close to 200 stores, and there's a tremendous amount of buying power which they have. They have their own cereals, they have their own soda, they have a lot of products which are there, which are, go under the giant label, but they do not have a single factory that makes anything. In other words, if they want to make cereal with a giant cereal, they go to a company, Kellogg's, I mean, I don't know if it's Kellogg's, not Kellogg's, whichever one it is, they go to a company and say, we want you to make a cereal and put it in a packaging for the of giant. And they do that for them. They want to have applesauce, giant applesauce, they go to applesauce company and they say, make us an applesauce. Now they may say, we want it a little bit sweeter than yours, they may say, we want it more pepper in it than yours, or whatever. They may have their own requirements of exactly how they want it to taste. But they don't make it. So that's called a private label. There's a company that is in this business, and they make a private label. Some companies only make private labels. They don't have their own label. So what's the problem with that? The label doesn't make it kosher treif. The label comes with a heksher on it. So let's say it's okay. Okay, heksher. So they, the okay deals with this company. They deal with giant food. And they say, you want to make it in this place. Okay, we'll make a contract. You have to make it according to, you have to let us come in and check it out and whatever, all the stipulations which are in the kashrus contract. Now, at the end of the year, the contract is over. So either they will renew the contract, the giant will renew the contract with the one, the manufacturer, or they may decide to go to someone else because to make this product, either because they're not satisfied with the product, or the delivery, or whatever it may be, or because they found a place that's cheaper, somewhere else that's cheaper. So when they go to the next company, the minig is that all the leftover labels, they ship to this, universally done in the United States, they ship the labels, which they haven't used yet, to this new company, this new private label manufacturer, they could use it. Because these labels belong to Giant. They don't belong to the company. Giant supplies them with the labels, or at least they pay for the labels, and then it goes to the new place. Now, what happens if the old place, all the ingredients here are kosher, but in the old place, they only make kosher foods. In the new place, they make trefa foods also. And even if it's just applesauce, but if they make something that's treif that they have to cook, applesauce is cooked. So it may have be a problem they can't easily give a heksher to the new place, unless they were kasher. And to kasher every Monday and Thursday is a very big job. It's expensive, because you have to have people down and working and being in charge of it. So the other company doesn't want to do that. They have made up a price, and they don't have this extra expense. So then, now's the problem. There's a heksher on this label. There's an okay on this label. So what do you do over here? So in most of the contracts, it says that in case you go to another company, we have to approve the other company, otherwise you can't use these labels. Okay, so now if they have $20,000 worth of labels, they're not so inclined to just throw them away. So maybe they can black them out, they cannot black them out. But they have to know about it. That's the thing. And if for some reason in the middle of the term they would change their company, for whatever reason it may be, So the Kashrus company would have to know that they're not making for them anymore. And so it's a headache, but they are on top of it. It's a challenge, let's put it that way. It's a challenge, that I'm therefore not allowed to speak about it, but Baruch Hashem, they're on top of it. Now, sometimes there's something very misleading. You may find a item that has two or more Heksherim on it. One says that it is under, let's say, the star K, and says kosher for Pesach. And there'll be another Heksher, which is under, let's say, the Hesachdus, Rabbanim, CRC. There's two CRC Heksherim, by the way. CRC, one is from Chicago, it stands for Chicago Rabbinical Council. And then there's the Hesachdus, Rabbanim, Chassidus Heksher, which is also the CRC, which stands for Central Rabbinical Congress. And they're completely different, and one nothing to do with the other. They just use the same symbols. So the Saptas very often also has a, sometimes like a fancy label with on it. Sometimes you can tell and sometimes you can't. All right, but let's say the Saptas does not want to be matched for Pesach. There's something there which is controversial. They will also, but it's kosher for the whole year, so they put the heksher on also. So over here you see that the product will say kosher for Passover, the star K will say kosher for Pesach, and this one will just say it's kosher. Now how are you supposed to figure out that they're not saying that it's kosher for Pesach? This is basically what they're saying. As a matter of fact, that this is an issue because there are certain foods which there's a question about them, whether they're considered kosher for Pesach or not. And like you have, artificial sugar, no calories. It's made, and here, I don't want to upset anyone, it's the excretion of bacteria. They go and they eat corn syrup, and they excrete this sugar, which has no calories. Everyone's calishing to use this sugar. The question is this kosher Pesach or not? Do we say that even though it starts out from corn syrup, but this is ingested by this bacteria? They eat it, and this is just what comes out. And it's not considered corn syrup anymore, or not. Or do we say that what happens if you have a big vat, 10,000 gallons of corn syrup, you take a handful of powder, you put it in the top, and then tomorrow morning you come and you say, it's all the corn syrup is eaten up, and all that, and this is kosher. All of a sudden it becomes kosher. This doesn't sound so kosher to me. Anyway, I don't know what the answer was. I went to the answer of Yashiv in Eretz Yisrael, Zeng Tzad of Racha, and he said, it's a question of kidneys over here, which is also with the Ashkenaz Jews don't eat it on Pesach. He says you should consider it kidneys, and therefore we don't use it. But there are other kosher agencies which do consider it kosher. And therefore, you might see someone says, kosher for Passover, and the other one doesn't say kosher for Passover. No, it's kosher for the whole year. It's not a Passover product per se. It's just that they say you can use it for Passover. So it becomes problematic for the consumer to be able to figure out is it kosher for Passover or is it not. You would think if it says, part of it says kosher for Passover because they're relying on the heksher says kosher for Passover, that one just says kosher. What do you do in such a case? As a matter of fact, we had a case in point that there was pizza. Packaged pizza was sold and with stake. Now, we had a big problem. It said on it, on the front, made with apple juice. And the brachas mezainis. In the ingredients, it said it was a pizza crust. The ingredients said flour, water, and salt. It didn't say anything about apple juice. So it was a stira over here. Is it made with apple juice? Not made with apple juice. So we were, since I had a stake on it, and stake didn't say anything about the Zionists, they put it on the front. So we were in a bind. They asked me, does it have apple juice or it doesn't? I said, the packaging has apple juice. Because the product didn't have any apple juice. People can write on the front whatever they want. You know, it's not against the law as long as you haven't fooled the customer, which I guess you have. Okay, so we made him take it off because we were the only one who gave him the hechsher. We say don't write as a mezainis, not because we don't say you're not supposed to be a mezainis, but because we don't get involved with that. That's not our mission as a kashrus agency to decide what kind of bracha it is. We'll give you the information, and your rabbanim will decide what the bracha is. Okay, now there's a problem about Israeli produce. Israeli produce, you're allowed to eat Israeli produce unless it is. You're allowed to eat Israeli produce. Sometimes with Shemitah there could be a problem. What exactly, how you're supposed to eat it and what you're supposed to do with it. But Israeli produce, people in Israel also eat food. So it is really, the question is, they have additional restrictions in Israel which we do not have over here in America. One of them is arla, fruit of the first 3 years. The truth is, and this is only from fruit which grows on a tree, we're not talking about vegetables now. It grows from a tree that gives, year after year, gives fruit. So the first 3 years, you're not allowed to eat the fruit. So the first 3 years doesn't mean from the time you put the seed in the ground, but if you take a whole tree, you uproot it, and there's no earth left on the roots that it can live by, and you replant it somewhere else, it's also arla. You have to wait another 3 years until you can use it. And especially when it comes to wine, which are made from grapes, that they usually replant, when they replant a vine, they put into the old trunk from where it grows, their vines, and so that way it goes faster. And so it's an issue. So every reliable heksher has a detailed map of every single plant, every vine, to know when it was planted and how it was planted because of this question. But when you're dealing with grapes that come, they don't have a heksher, they're just coming from Israel, which is not so, if you would have that, then there's a problem of arla. Actually, arla is forbidden in chutz la'aretz also. But there's one difference, and that is that if there is a question of whether it's arla or not in Eretz Yisrael, it is forbidden. And in chutz la'aretz, places beside out of Eretz Yisrael, it is permitted. As long as it's a halacha on Moshe Mi-Sinai, it's not because it's a sofek lekula. It is actually permitted. And the Gemara actually says that if you have a question, you're allowed to make it into a question. In other words, if you have some which are from after Arla, after 3 years and before, and if you mix them up, So someone else is allowed to actually eat them, not all together one time, because then you for sure eat the first half and then eat the other half. Because when you eat the first half, you say, maybe it's not. And when you eat the second half, you say, maybe I already ate it. And it's not. It's a special halacha, Moshe Mitzina, and Chosoi. So we're not worried about Orla. You never see that this doesn't have any Orla in it on the Heksha. But in Eretz Yisrael, you do see it, because it's important. And over there, it actually is also. But besides that, even when Orla doesn't apply, let's say in the case of vegetables, and there's certain vegetables which are grown in Eretz Yisrael, like green peppers or yellow peppers, I guess red peppers also, they come from Eretz Yisrael. You have carrots that come from Eretz Yisrael. You have parsley, which comes from Eretz Yisrael. A very significant percentage of the world's parsley, which is in America, a significant percentage comes from Eretz Yisrael. So you have to take trumas and maises from them. So if you take trumas and maises, no problem. You can do that. But you have to know that it comes from Eretz Yisrael in order to know to do that. So sometimes it says product of Israel. It will say that, produce of Israel. It will say that, so then you know you've got to do it. Of course, since we're not so familiar with taking trumas and maases, it might be a little bit of a imposition on us. But basically, every art scroll siddur has in it how to take trumas and maases. And Israel, they do it in their sleep. They take trumas and maases. It's not a problem. But it has to be done. And if it's not done, the food basically is treif. You can't eat it until you've taken trumas and maases. So there used to be, let's say, there was a company called Dorot, that they had a heksha for Rav Mizrahi that... It didn't say the heksha on the package, but they had a letter from Rav Mizrahi that he took trumas and maases and everything comes to the United States. This year, he didn't give them a letter. Evidently, that this year they didn't use the services anymore. You probably have not seen it in the supermarket because it's a wholesale name. And when it's repackaged, it will have nothing on it. So anyway, it doesn't help. And and since those companies now have become aware that the kashrus agencies in the United States will not use them, so instead of writing on it produce of Israel, the way it says country of origin, it has an EX, which means it's exempt from saying the same name of the country, and so therefore you should assume it's from Israel, because that's the only place where it would say EX. Now, if it says Palestine, sometimes it says Palestine. No, that's not a joke. This is the truth. So if it actually comes from Palestine, you don't have to take trumas and maases, even though the Palestine is in Eretz Yisrael because it belongs to Goyim. But this is a trick. It's that sometimes they'll write Palestine so that it should be accepted, and so you can't rely on that anymore. During the Shemitah year, so no one bought from the Jewish producers because there were too many problems involved with it. I mean, some people did buy because the Israeli government sold the whole Israel to Goyim. Well, you know, I would think that someone who is a staunch Zionist would be against selling Eretz Yisrael to Goyim. But it didn't seem to be a problem for some of them. So it's kind of controversial whether this kind of sale helps for various reasons. I'm not going to get into that now. But the non-frum farmers in Eretz Yisrael, they were able to sell their produce to the Arab farmers, and they sold it product of Palestine to the rest of the world, because now that people thought there was no Shemitah problem with them, when actually it wasn't the case. It actually started out by Jewish rabbi. This is talking about challenges. These are some of the challenges that we are have to deal with. There is a question. Forget about it. Are there any questions? Yes. Okay, it's not for stevia. It doesn't apply to stevia, and that's actually not artificial. It is actually a plant. But tell me the name of the I've forgotten the name of the sugar. Aspartame. Huh? No, that's the trade name. Aspartame. Sucralose. Not sucralose is the chemical aspartame name, but I'm talking about the aspartame. It's aspartame. That's what it is. As a matter of fact, I remember I was with the when it came out. It's not that old, the aspartame, maybe 15 years, maybe 20. So I called up the one who invented it and asked them how they made it. That's what they said. That's what they do. It's all made from corn syrup. They take corn syrup and they take these bacteria and they throw it in. And they changed it into this calorie-free sugar, which is the excrement. Yes. I'm sorry, I wasn't able to hear what you're saying. I'm already after 65, so I'm not so I don't hear so well.
For the
What led to the change? Well, you know, you can't see these worms that are in the flesh only with an ultraviolet light you can see them. If you get an ultraviolet light, you can see them clearly. And if you want to check them, if you like this wild salmon, you can check it. But you have to use the ultraviolet light. You can see they're big worms. They're about 2 inches long. They're not, they're geschmack of worms. I mean.
Related to that question, I think you said that it was primarily a North Atlantic problem, so like Alaskan salmon, okay?
The, you know that the Pacific and Atlantic are connected. So it's mostly, the most of the fishing is done in the North Atlantic. The North Pacific, I know they maybe have too many glaciers, you know, these ice things, and it's not so nicer to kind of fish over there. I'm not sure. But it is, I believe it's the same thing. It's in the northern part of the world. Okay, yes?
Can you talk about the whole issue of bread that we've recently seen in the press about using the mishkafa?
Bread?
What is this issue with the bread?
The question about bread. What's the issue with bread? I wasn't so familiar with the breads of losing the hashgacha. What it probably is, if you take bread and you make it to the dough with milk, the bread is treif. I don't know if you're aware of that. You know, it's not milchit. It actually is treif. So the chomer made a takana over here, and they said that since bread is the staple of every meal, And if you're going to put milk into it, or animal fat, it's the same thing. I mean, kosher animal fat, which is, and you're going to make it fleishig. Since you use it with milchik meals and fleishig meals, we're afraid that it'll come, the eating milchiks and fleishiks to at the same meals. So that's why they said it's treif. So maybe now there is, someone found out that if you put some milk in it, so that it's good for some, it's healthy for something or whatever, I don't know. They usually put it in to give it a texture, not for the taste. But they usually put in about 2%, which is not bottle position. And so therefore, it becomes straight. I don't know. I'm not aware that the bread is treif. But there's
a particular thing came out a few weeks ago that there's some big, like, national company that makes a whole bunch of different breads. That they've been bought out or whatever, and the new owners have decided that they don't want to continue with Hashkafa. But it wasn't clear whether it was because of the milk crop or something else.
Okay. Okay, so there are certain, not everything doesn't have hashgacha, it's treif. You know, people used to eat food before they had hashgachas. It's only that today everything's become so complicated because of all the new technology, all the new technologies, so they figured out that this is good and that's good, and they put in all kinds of things. So it has caused new issues, and therefore today, if you don't have a heksher on bread, which seems to be just flour and water, seems to be no problem. As a matter of fact, when I was in France, they told me that the French bread, everyone eats the French bread without any hashgacha, because you have to have a special oven for the French bread if you want to call it French bread, and it's only flour, water, and salt. And there are no questions with it. If there are no questions, you can eat it. The question is, do we know that there's no question? How do you know that there's no question? So you need someone who's knowledgeable about what's going on to tell you that there's no question. And that's really like today you have water with Heksha. Okay, so do you know that one of the waters is not Kosher Pesach? It actually has kidneys in it. One of the waters, it doesn't have a heksher for Pesach, it just has a regular heksher on it, and it is not kosher for Pesach. So today you never know. When you say that this water comes from this spring someplace in Pennsylvania, do you know where it comes from, the faucet? It's just that all water comes from a spring somewhere. Where do you think water comes from? So it comes from the spring, so they can say it comes from this spring. They do usually take out the chemicals which they put into it. They, with the osmosis, reverse osmosis, they usually get out. They get out it is purer. But on the other hand, once you get out the chlorine, which they put into the water typically, 1.5 parts per million, which is typically put into chlorine, there is also the possibility that it could become contaminated, even though it is more pure, because it's more pure. Our water, which is not so pure, so then it is less likely to get any of those type of contaminants in it, because they have the chlorine which kills all these harmful bacteria, if there would be any in it. Of course there are some, there's arsenic in the water naturally, and other things which they would take out in the bottled water. So there's something to it. They could put things in, they do actually put in mineral waters. Sometimes they put minerals in them, because to call it mineral water, you've got to put some minerals in. Okay.
Does olive oil need a heksher these days?
Olive oil needs a heksher these days more than it ever did before. Olive oil is an expensive type of oil. It is typically adulterated with other seed oils. That's pretty much normal. Just like honey is typically adulterated with corn syrup. And it's very hard to tell. There's only one lab in the whole United States, in Texas, that can test. They have the equipment to test if there is corn syrup in the honey or not. Only one. It's such a difficult test. And we have a company that says honey with corn syrup. At least they're my dilemmas. You saw they say me first. That is, has corn syrup in it. So therefore, especially for important for Pesach, because if you want to have honey on Pesach, so you can't have any corn syrup in it because it's kidneys. And so it's important that that you should have it. But most of the seed oils which they put in, they're all kosher. It's just not olive oil. So if you want to use it for Hanukkah, you want to make sure you have olive oil. So you better make sure that you get one that has a hechsher that says it's olive oil. Okay, Rabbi Isai, thank you very much. And I wish you a good day.
I'd like to take the opportunity once again to thank Rabbi Heinemann for his very insightful lecture, and also to take the opportunity to thank Rabbi Heinemann for benefiting the Greater Washington Jewish Community for many decades with his scholarship and expertise and chesed and kindness. So we'll have an intermission now and refreshments, and in a couple of minutes we'll start with the second part of our program.